HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 215, recorded live Thursday, May 27th, 2010. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks World Travel Tips with James Sr.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I am sitting today in a fancy hotel room in Sydney, Australia with James Sr. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, Scott.
And we are in the process of a worldwide tour. You have gone through London and Moscow and Toronto and Beijing and Shanghai, and I joined you in Beijing.
We've nearly forgotten.
Yeah, we've forgotten the cities and we're moving forward. And you've got Singapore left and miles to go before you sleep.
Yeah, a lot of places. So it was a stop in New York, then on to Moscow, then to Beijing, which I learned is not actually pronounced Beijing, but Beijing, whilst there, which was useful. Then Shanghai, and now we are in Sydney.
Indeed. And so we are traveling, and we tend to travel a lot, and we thought we'd do a show about travel tips, because we're both, I think, seasoned travelers.
We like to think such, yes.
We like to think so. So if you are a traveler, this is the show for you. Let's talk about getting to and from the airport and kind of the prep stuff that you have to do. What are some tips that you use for getting ready to go to the airport?
Carry on. They're just a simple tip. Just carry on. Don't try and overpack. I know that when I travel, I always travel light. If we just contrast that with someone like my girlfriend, for example, you know, and bless her, she likes to, you know, take a lot of clothes and things and overpack. Mm-hmm. I think people don't realize you can get away with a lot less things when you're traveling. And so just try and take the bare essentials and carry on your luggage.
Exactly. I think the thing to remember is that wherever you're going is probably not Mars. People have legs and arms just like we do, and therefore one can purchase shirts and pants. And if you forget something or you really need something, it can be purchased usually very inexpensively.
Don't panic. You forget a travel adapter, for example, for power, or I don't know, I picked up a 110 to 240 volt converter at the hotel here. You can normally get things from reception. They're pretty accommodating.
Right. You're not the first person to forget something. So focus on the essentials. Like for me as a diabetic, I focus more on power bars and snacks and insulin, and make sure you've got your USB adapters and your kind of more exotic power adapters.
Yeah. I mean, I think you and I focus mainly on the gadgets as well.
Yeah. As long as everything charges, pants are really secondary.
Yeah, I've gone with no clothes whatsoever, but just as long as I've got my laptop.
Right. Completely nude, but a great high-definition camera.
Exactly.
And also, if you're going to be gone for an extended period of time, as you have been, use the hotel laundry. You've got a single carry-on bag and a backpack, and you've been doing laundry at the hotel.
Most people would consider this insane, but I'm traveling now. I will be traveling for 27 days total.
Wow.
So nearly a month. And I'm doing it all with a single carry-on and a backpack. Mm-hmm. So in my backpack, I have two laptops. I have a range of gadgets from high-definition cameras to portable hard disk drives. I don't know, various other power adapters, etc., cameras. And in my main luggage, which I'm also carrying on, it's a small kind of wheelie luggage as well. And we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later on. It's basic clothes, wash bag, all miniaturized.
And all segmented. I've noticed that when we get through to security, the way that you've packed is you've put all of your toiletries in one bag that's sitting on the top of your bag. So you literally open it up, pull it out, boom, and right there are all of your toiletries.
Yeah. It's thinking ahead. What are you going to need to get out of your bags in order to get through the airport process?
Right. And you would be surprised how little you really need to be taking when you go somewhere.
Absolutely.
So don't panic. And then, of course, checking in online. I think we all use e-tickets now. You know, we definitely want to eschew the paper ticket whenever possible. Mm-hmm. But checking in at the airport from a speed perspective is death.
It can be. It varies between airlines. If you know the airline you're traveling with and you know the airport, then you can normally get away with perhaps the computer kiosks that will give you the ticket. And they're quite convenient. Mm-hmm. But for airlines that you're not very familiar with, it's best to go ahead and see if you can check online, because sometimes you'll get caught up in some nasty lines because they haven't got the kiosks at the certain airport that you're traveling from. So make sure you check in online, either print out your boarding pass, or get, like you said, Scott, the new kind of mobile device version of that, where exactly. they can scan it off your phone.
And with international flights, sometimes now you can put your passport information in online.
Exactly.
Yeah. And make sure you've got all of your visas.
Yeah, well, that's the story. Yeah. So I was advised that I didn't need a visa to get into Australia. And so I went up to the check-in desk in Shanghai as we were leaving, and I was advised by the nice, smiley lady who was serving me that I needed a visa, and I didn't have one. Of course, Scott was very pleased with himself because he had a visa for Australia, but I didn't. So it wasn't too much of a traumatic process. I just needed to go around the corner and buy one.
It could have been, though.
But it could have been. So make sure you plan ahead. Make sure that you know all of the constraints on the place you're traveling to.
And when you're doing visas like that, remember that there's a difference between a visa that allows you to enter a country and a visa that allows you to transit through one. And this is really interesting when you're doing EU countries and you're not an American citizen, because I was traveling with my wife and my sister-in-law. My sister-in-law has a green card. And she was we were transiting. So we were going from Johannesburg to, I think we went to Frankfurt, right. Frankfurt to Paris, and then Paris back to Portland. Well, we entered Europe at Frankfurt. She did not have an EU visa. She did not have a Schengen visa or anything. But somehow we got in. And I'm not saying, and to be clear, we didn't know. We just walked through a door, and the next thing we know, we were here. But we didn't really go into Europe. We were just going to go from Frankfurt to Paris. Then we were in Paris getting ready to leave, and the person at the passport counter says, "How are you here? You're not even supposed to be here."
Yeah.
Now, of course, we were leaving and they realized that it was a mistake, but it turns out it was we never should have been allowed to have left Frankfurt. Mm-hmm. That could have been a very, very sticky situation. So be aware of your visas. Be aware there are some very subtle things. A U.S. citizen didn't need a transit visa, but a U.S. green card holder did. And then, of course, when you do show up and you're ready to stamp your passport, make sure you have enough pages.
Uh-huh.
Some countries have specifics. South Africa requires at least 2 pages of blank area. Otherwise, they'll kick you out.
And what happens then in that scenario?
Well, with Lance Armstrong had this problem about a month and a half ago. Lance Armstrong, the famous American cyclist, showed up in South Africa with a full passport, or he had a single page free. And then the embassy got involved and all this kind of VIP stuff happened, and it became a big problem. I had the same exact situation happen in South Africa.
With the VIP status in the embassy?
Didn't have the VIP status, okay. But I did have a bit of a back and forth with the visa folks, and admittedly, but very easily could have been sent back through lack of planning on my part.
Right.
You typically 9 times out of 10, it's your fault for not doing your research.
Right. So this is all stuff before you go, on the day of departure. But what about actually getting to the airport? Any tips there, Scott?
Well, I definitely try to avoid taking the car if I can. If you can take the bus or take the train, you're going to save big, big money, especially short-term or medium-term parking. You're looking at $20-$30 a day.
Yep.
Take the light rail or the train directly there. But also when you get there, it is so expensive if you just decide to hop in a black car or hop in a taxi and get to the hotel.
Yeah, I mean, going to the airport, I travel a lot from Seattle, obviously, being based there. And, I started out getting the cab because when I first moved there, I didn't really know the public transport system at all. So I was getting taxis to the airport, and that was around about $40 to $50 a time. And that really adds up if you're traveling frequently. Mm-hmm. So shortly after, I realized, I was spending a lot of money on cabs. So I said, okay, how do I cut this back? And the bus going to the airport is not only very, very efficient in terms of time, takes 30 minutes from Seattle downtown to SeaTac Airport, but it's also very cost effective. I think it's around $2.50 for a ticket. Mm-hmm. And now we have the new and improved light rail, which is even more clean and pristine, etc. But like you said, getting from the airport to your destination, again, look into local transport if you can, get some advice, perhaps visit the information desk, find out what the best deals are, the best way of getting to your final destination.
I think that people who aren't doing that, they're paying for the convenience, but they need to realize how much they're paying for the convenience. I mean, $2 versus $50 is a big, you're paying $48 for convenience.
Yeah.
A perfect example is coming back from PDC this last October. Everyone was taking taxis to the airport from the Sheraton, and you're looking at $45, $55.
Yep.
But our business manager Shanti and I ended up just taking the train from downtown LA. It was $2 to get to the airport, and it only required one train change. And the only reason to not do that would be the fear of the unknown.
Yep, exactly.
But your hotel concierge knows this stuff. Ask him. Take advantage of your concierge when you're moving from place to place. We showed up in Sydney today.
Yep.
You had a car scheduled and we canceled it.
We canceled it before we left Shanghai just because we felt we were more comfortable. In an English-speaking country, mm-hmm. we felt like we should be able to get around. And sure enough, we got a train ticket for $15 Australian. And within 20 to 30 minutes, we were in downtown Sydney, mm-hmm. two blocks from our hotel.
Exactly. And it would have been $95
yeah.
had we kept the taxi. So we saved $60 between the two of us. And that was pretty nice.
Your boss will be happy.
My boss will be thrilled. One other thing to remember is that when you're parking or when you're going to the airport, if there's, and this is just a personal tip, I actually learned this from Scott Cate. He said, take pictures of everything that you need to remember. If you're going to be gone for 27 days, take a picture of where you parked your car. Take a picture of receipts. Take a picture of baggage claim receipts. Anything at all that you could lose, remembering that your phone is probably the one thing you are the least likely to lose.
Yep.
Take a picture. And myself, when I do take a picture, I take it with Evernote, which actually synchronizes the data into the cloud. So even if I do, in fact, lose my phone, I'll still have pictures of my documents. Scott takes pictures of Wi-Fi passcodes.
Hotel room numbers.
Hotel room. It's funny. I've taken pictures. Have I not?
You actually need that to find your way around the hotel.
I take a picture of the front of my hotel room so I don't forget the hotel room number.
That's a good one.
It's simple. Pick something that works for you. So once you get to the airport, what are some things that we can do to, what are some kind of tips to make sure that you're effective at the airport?
Well, there's some tools available that I would, thoroughly recommend. I live and die by these tools. Things like TripIt, for example. TripIt helps me to manage all of my itineraries for
That's TRIPIT, TripIt.
.com. Yeah. And so they have a great website where you can go and manage all of your itineraries. And they also have a really cool, email. Feature functionality where you send off to them your itineraries and your receipts for your travel bookings, and they will interpret them. They will scan them and figure out what exactly you're doing, mm-hmm. and then add it to their system and create a new itinerary for you. Mm-hmm. So you don't even have to do data entry. You can be really lazy. You can get your receipts from Kayak or from American Express Travel or whatever it is, and then forward it on to TripIt, mm-hmm. and then bang, you've got a new itinerary created in TripIt. And the reason why TripIt is useful, and why the reason why you have that itinerary is useful, is because it helps you to navigate around and make sure you're not missing flights, etc.
Exactly. There's really no excuse to miss a flight. Mm-hmm. And, well, the great thing about TripIt is that if you, maybe you, the listener, have an itinerary in your inbox right now, pause this podcast, forward that itinerary, just literally go into your email and forward it to plans@tripit.com. You don't have to sign up for anything. They'll automatically make an account for you based on your email address. They'll parse it. And if you have this is great if you've got a significant other or a partner that you need to keep up to date on all of your travel plans. You just forward all this stuff. It can be a hotel reservation from American Express. It can be a flight reservation from Expedia. They'll parse it all. They parse hundreds of different kinds of documents, even attachments. They'll even do PDF attachments.
They will look inside your emails and look at PDFs. That is awesome.
And it will make a nice, clean one-pager that you can hand to your spouse and say, here's where I'm going to be.
Yep.
It is unreal. It's almost like having a virtual assistant.
And the other cool things it does is track all of your trips. So if you're a frequent traveler, you can kind of get statistics on how far you've traveled, where you've been. Mm-hmm. You can find out who's going to be nearby. So you can have a contact list, mm-hmm. to say, hey, Scott Hanselman is going to be in Sydney at the same time as you. And you might want to get in touch, go for a drink or whatever. And the other fun thing is it has league tables of who in your group of friends has traveled the most. So if you're kind of competitive and you mm-hmm. want to have the most miles, or you want to have been to the most cities or traveled to the most countries, then you can track that too.
And having that extra information allows you to take action when it's appropriate.
Right.
And that's a really good tip. When you're at the airport, passivity, being passive, will kill you. And that means that if you're on a flight and you're waiting for the flight to board, and then maybe it's delayed, and then it's delayed again, and people are starting to mill around, this is where you, as the savvy traveler, take action.
And there's been a lot of times when I've found that the information I've been given, and this is information that goes to the masses who are at the airport by agents, is perhaps inaccurate in some cases. And I found that whilst checking on my device with services like TripIt and other services, that I can find more accurate information, more up-to-date information. So I can step one, I can stay one step ahead of the mob.
people are looking on their documents to find out what the next flight is, where the next terminal is. But with SMS alerts and smartphone applications, you already know the layout of the airport, which way to turn when you get out, and what the most effective way to get to the next gate is, which is tough when you have really tight connections.
Yeah, and there's an example where I was flying from New York to Moscow, and I'd arrived into JFK. My flight was a little bit delayed getting to the gate, and my transfer time was around about 20 to 30 minutes, which is not a lot of time. Mm-hmm. And the airline assistant on board didn't know which terminal I was going to for my flight to Moscow. When I got out of the aircraft onto the gate, the agent didn't know which terminal I needed to go to. So this was a problem. So they said, I'll go to the customer service desk right down the other end of the terminal. Mm-hmm. JFK is a busy, big airport. I don't want to do that. I click quickly get on to TripIt. I click on the get flight status button for my next flight, and it tells me automatically what terminal I am at, or what terminal I need to be at. And so then I hopped on the bus, got there, and I was like 5 minutes before the doors closed, which is, I would have missed that flight had I not had that tool.
Exactly. There's been many times where I've been on flights that looked like they were going to get canceled, but we kept being kind of shined on by the gate agents saying, well, you know, it could take off, it could take off. This is where you take action. You pick up the phone, you call if you're an MVP or if you're a premier with a particular airline, like I'm premier with Alaska Airlines, call them up and say, it's looking like this is going to be canceled. And I need to get moved on to something else. And this is where you want to speak the language of the sky.
What do you mean by that?
Well, the whole goal here is to save time, right? If you're going to save time, you need to speak the language of the agents. And by that, I mean being able to pick up the phone and say, you know, I'm on delayed United 686 from LGA to Chicago. Can you get me on standby United 680?
Wow. That sounds like you you know what you're talking about.
I'm not saying you need to be a flight agent, but I'm saying that you can say, hi, you know, how's it going? I'm on this flight. What's your name, sir? What's your flight? If you can talk to them in the same way that they're talking to each other, it makes their lives easier. And those small shortcuts can move you forward in your travel experience, I think, a lot better. The other thing is that when you're trying to jump around from flight to flight, you never want to give up a guaranteed seat for the chance at a seat.
Right. So if you're trying to get on a flight, which is earlier on, perhaps, mm-hmm. in the day.
You don't want to say, well, I'm going to give up my seat and move to this other flight, maybe at the chance of a seat. You can put yourself on standby and make sure that you always kind of keep your finger on the chess piece before you make your move, because you never really want to give up a guaranteed seat. And at all points, you really want to be pleasant.
Yep. Don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy, because that guy never gets upgraded.
your life will be a living hell. They have the power to do that.
Hey, it's Alternate Universe Scott Hanselman. Going to thank our sponsors for making this free show possible. We've been doing Hansel Minutes for almost 4 years now, and we really couldn't do it without Telerik. So I want to tell you about some of the stuff they're working on. If you've already started developing with Silverlight, then you'll probably need a solid testing tool to do your Silverlight UIs. Unfortunately, though, a lot of the tools available today only help you with unit testing. There's not really a good way to simulate the actual behavior of those end users, unless you spend days and weeks doing a lot of manual testing. But the guys at Telerik have got a new point-and-click UI testing tool for Silverlight, called Web UI Test Studio. And the beauty is that you can quickly record your tests with a cross-browser recorder. You can enrich them with code if you've got really complex scenarios. And on top of that, it supports all the standard controls as well as the Telerik enhanced controls. You can verify not only Silverlight, but even complex AJAX applications. Best part, Web UI Test Studio lives in Visual Studio, so you don't have to leave your favorite developer environment. You can check it out at telerik.com/web-testing-tools. And be sure to thank Telerik for supporting the show on their Facebook fan page at facebook.com/Telerik.
Now, when you're going through security, what are some things that you do, James, to get through faster?
So if I haven't already done this before getting to the airport, perhaps I've done this on the light rail or on the bus, whilst I'm waiting in line, I'll be taking off all metallic items. I'll be taking my watch off. I'll be putting it in my bag. My carry-on bag, my rucksack has a nice pouch at the top for these kind of items. I take my belt off. That goes in there. Any coins that I might have. Just getting ready. just getting ahead of the curve. And then by the time I'm at the place where you put all of the items into your tray and everybody's there frantically stressing and sweating because they're trying to get all of their items out, mm-hmm. you know, you're just gliding through, calm as can be.
One fluid motion.
It's just so simple. And if you've got, you know, items that you have liquid, for example. Well, like I have my carry-on, my roll-on, and I just flip it open, and I have my wash bag there on the top, which I get out and I put that in the tray. Another thing that I've found is that you don't need to have these plastic bags. I mean, officially you do, but in my experience, when mm-hmm. I've been going through many, many airports all around the world, my wash bag is perfectly fine to have all of those items in, you know, those 100 milliliters max kind of thing, and you just put them through.
As long as they're separate.
As long as they're separate, they seem to be fine with that.
Exactly. Getting all that stuff through security, and then also being prepared to explain yourself if there's some particular thing that's going to be difficult, if you have a pacemaker or whatever.
Well, you had a great example in China, right?
Yeah. So like I say, I'm diabetic, and I have an insulin pump that's attached to me, and I've got a continuous glucose meter that's literally implanted in my gut with a big old piece of tape, and it's kind of a funny looking thing. And this is something that's unusual to see in the States, and it's extremely unusual elsewhere. And I was actually in Tanzania, and I spent about an hour trying to explain this to the guys at the Kilimanjaro airport. And I said, I'm never going to do this again. So instead, I always try to learn how to say, you know, I'm a diabetic, or I need some help, or whatever, in the local language. They always say to get phrase books and learn about things like how to order food at the restaurant. Don't waste your time on that. You can always point in the menu. But when you're going through, you know, China airport and they've got Beijing airport like we were earlier this week, and I can say, Wo yao tan yao bing, and say, I'm a diabetic. Or if you're in Germany and you need to say, meine Blutzucker ist so niedrig, my
which
blood
is a little
sugar
bit more
is
abstract.
Low.
They have to do more working out. But
the point is, though, no, but blood sugar is low. I actually did that. That was just one example of a phrase. I was in Munich and my blood sugar was low, and I went into an apotheke, into a pharmacy, and just announced my blood sugar is low, and boom, all the German pharmacy people jumped to my aid. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I've learned to say, I'm a diabetic. This is an insulin pump, you know. It's una bomba de insulina, you know, in like 15 different languages because you need to do that.
And I remember watching you coming through the Beijing security gate and the horror on the face of the girl who was kind of waving the magic wand over you and go beep, 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 beep over your side. And then all of a sudden you kind of showed off this device in your hand and then it was wired up to you. And she, you know, the worst things were running through her mind. And then as soon as you mentioned this magical phrase in Chinese, she was like, oh, no problem, Mr. Hanselman, come through. Why didn't you say so before?
Exactly. Probably saved me 10 minutes.
Well, 10 hours probably.
And, well, certainly it saved me. Certainly it saved me secondary screening. And I think that's the point, is be prepared of what might need to happen. And in my case, it's, you know, if I'm traveling through Europe or traveling through Asia, learn how to say the things, I'm an asthmatic, I have a pacemaker, I'm a diabetic, or whatever, in the five or six languages. And one of the things that you and I did as we were wandering around China was we got the Lonely Planet phrase book.
And we're completely ignorant to the Chinese language.
Our Chinese is about. Really, really horrific, frankly. But when we're getting around, you know, we brought a little Lonely Planet application so we can ask things like, where is the toilet?
Essentials.
Essentials, you know. I'd like a taxi.
Well, that's one other thing. Bit of a tip. If you're in Beijing and you're trying to get a taxi at night, it seems to have been a bit of a problem. We were standing by the edge of the road and we were trying to hail a cab.
For half an hour.
For about half an hour. Some guy was telling us the most strategic place to stand on the side of the road. He was kind of helping us out, but still, no taxi. So actually, it turns out the metro in Beijing isn't too bad.
That's funny. So we actually didn't take our own advice initially and then said, wait a second. We're sitting here trying to get a taxi. Let's take the metro. And we were home in about 15 minutes.
Yep.
Just by taking the local subway. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a long flight. We flew into Beijing, and that was about a 10-hour flight. Mm-hmm. We just got off a flight literally a couple hours ago coming from Shanghai to Sydney, and that was about a 10-hour flight.
Yep.
And then I've got a 14-hour flight coming up to San Francisco soon. What do you do to break that flight up on a long haul? What do you do for 16 hours?
Well, I know that you've got multiple devices that serve different types of content and media.
I mentally chop the flight up into 2-hour segments because I think there's a certain psychological barrier there. I mean, that's a long time. Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
I can't just read magazines.
I always try and aim to sleep on a flight. I mean, that's my main goal, is to try and get as much rest as possible. Mm-hmm. But failing that, you need to have things to keep yourself busy.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes the airline content that they have on the video screens isn't, you know, exactly what you want. So perhaps, you know, having movies available that you've brought along on your laptop, perhaps a little bit of work if you need to get that done as well. I find that being on a plane is great, efficient work time personally, because there's no distractions from being connected to the internet. There's no emails coming in. And some of my best work, some of my kind of most solid pieces of work, like that I've had 3 hours to work on from mm-hmm. start to finish.
Yeah.
I find that I've done it on an airplane.
There's nothing like locking yourself into a giant steel tube 30,000 feet up in the air to really get some work done.
Since you put it like that, yes.
Yeah,
I should take more flights.
It's brilliant. But I always assume the worst. I always assume I won't be able to sleep and I'm going to need to entertain myself for 10 solid hours. So I bring DVDs, I bring videos. I think I brought 9 movies on this trip.
That's an aggressive schedule of movies.
Well, and here's the thing. I've only watched 3 of them, but I know that they're there. And again, this is a psychological trick. A lot about traveling and be effective at traveling, especially not going insane in the giant steel tube in the sky, is knowing what works for you. And for me, just the fact that I've got my Kindle with 100 books on it or whatever, you know, I think I've actually got like 10 or 15 books. I've got the magazines, comic books. I've got the videos. Lets me know that at least I won't be bored. I may have other things going on the flight, but I won't be bored.
Yep.
So definitely break your flight up mentally.
And also keep hydrated during the flight. You can't stress that enough. And that's very important that you take on lots of water. And that if you're on a long flight, also take the time to stretch, walk around the cabin, mm-hmm. you know, wiggle your toes, get the circulation going.
Someone told me that the average humidity out in the world is, you know, the average place in the world is like 60%, but 70%, but on a plane, it's like 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And you just seep water out of your system. So you should go through, you know, a liter or two over the course of a big long flight like that.
And before I get on the plane, I often try and buy a big bottle of water to take mm-hmm. on with me. Obviously, you can't take it through security, but as soon as you hit the newsstands, pick up a paper, get a bottle of water. Chewing gum also is quite nice. So when you get off the flight, you've got fresh breath and you don't feel like you've got, you know, your mouth is like a dog. So that's nice.
How much do you think that those Bose noise-canceling headphones are worth it? Do they really make you feel more refreshed when you get off a flight?
So I spoiled myself about 2 months ago, and I bought myself these new nice Bose headphones. And prior to that, I had the in-ear ones that you use.
Right,
and
I use the Edimotics Shure headphones that go in the ear.
But I found for long flights, if they were in for maybe 5, 6, 7 hours, then they started to hurt a little bit.
Mm.
I think they expanded and contracted in my ear or whatever, according to the pressure. And so the Bose ones fit over my ears and are much more comfortable for longer.
But it's worth it, though? I mean, did you feel that the not hearing the deep humming of the engine makes you more relaxed?
I would say so, yeah, definitely.
Now, what do you use to get the best seats on the plane? I think that, you know, getting exit row seats or failing getting exit row seats, getting a really good seat that reclines, not getting 36G.
That infamous seat that nobody wants.
Right in the butt of the plane.
Well, there's this site called seatguru.com, which I use religiously to help me find the best seats on the plane. And it tells you, using a heat map, visually, where in the different classes of the cabin you're going to find the best seats. And there's some hidden gems on there. There really are. If seats which you wouldn't expect to be very good because they're located in certain areas of the plane. For mm-hmm. example, the back sometimes has some really good seats and various other places. And it will show you according to not only the aircraft but also the airline, because also, remember, airlines have different configurations for different aircrafts. So it depends on those two factors. So check it out and you'll get really good advice on where to try and get a seat.
Right. You would think that a flight would be the same just based on the kind of airplane. But for example, on long haul flights, sometimes they'll take a number of rows in the back on the right side of the plane and they'll cordon them off so that the flight attendants can have a private space.
Exactly.
But then that prevents the seats in front of them from reclining.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not careful, you can certainly end up with a very bad or worse than normal seat.
Exactly. And there's no excuse really for not using this tool in concert with your check-in online, because online check-in now features the ability to pick a seat.
Exactly.
And so you should have this window open where you're picking your seat, and also Seat Guru open to find out if you're actually getting the best one.
Now, the best way to get a good seat, of course, is to have some status on the airline, to have flown enough to build up some miles and either upgrade them or have enough miles that they'll see you coming and upgrade you.
Yep.
Now, you're pretty obsessive about this, I know, both with hotel points. We're both Starwood people. Starwood is a hotel points system, and then also with airlines.
Yeah, well, let's talk about airlines first. I think that one of the golden rules is where you live, where you kind of your home hub is, match that up with the airline's home hub. So, for example, I live in Seattle. That is the home hub for Alaska Airlines. So, therefore, it makes sense that most flights that I take, or majority of flights, I'll be able to get out of Seattle with Alaska, going to various destinations. And this varies, you know, Atlanta will be Delta. I'm not sure what Portland is or if it has a hub.
Portland's Alaska as well.
Right. So that's kind of a golden rule. The other thing to think about when you're choosing which airline to bank with, because it really is a choice, you know, you need to go whole hog with one airline to make maximum efficiency. The other consideration is to having the kind of the ones with the biggest airline partners. So I know that Star Alliance, for example, is an example with, you know, an umbrella program where it has lots of airlines involved. So that's another thing to think about. So try and book with that airline. Also make sure if they have a credit card that you can use to accrue points, use that. Make sure you're taking all of the advantages from that. And then when it comes to hotels, I think the industry recognizes and that Starwood that you mentioned has been like the best hotel chain for the last 5, 6, 7 years or whatever it is.
Starwood includes Westin and Sheraton and Aloft and W.
Yeah,
I
mean,
and
the great thing about Sheraton, the great thing about Starwood is they have kind of high-end hotels. St. Regis is kind of their flagship brand, but they go all the way down to kind of Aloft and Four Points, which are much, much more affordable. So they've got a great scale.
Exactly.
And these points all accrue to the same program. And then you can use the points to book nice trips, you can use the points to book flights, you can use the points to get money off of hotel stays, pay for entire stays, etc.
And as a business traveler, this really makes your life easier. And I'm only, I think, regular or silver this year. I didn't go gold. You're platinum, though, this year.
I really paid attention to it last year.
And you and I are paying, to be clear, the same price. I've been traveling all over the world with James, and we both walk into hotels. We both pay the same price. But what are you getting that I'm not?
Well, with platinum, you get automatic upgrades if they're available. You get, I think the latest perk is that you get free wireless, free internet access in the hotels.
Right. So I'm paying 24 Australian dollars a day for Wi-Fi, which I'm unfortunately the company will have to pay for. But you're getting free Wi-Fi, and we're sitting in a multi-room suite that you're paying the same price I'm paying for, and you've got a fax, and you've got a view, and you've got multiple bathrooms.
And oftentimes, the hotel will have a club level, and you get access to the club level where they have free refreshments, free dinner. I think that's where we're going to go for food later on.
And, of course, a good place to work.
And a good place to work, yeah. So it's kind of a great way to kind of make the most of your stay. And you know, getting that platinum level is really worth it. And I really focused on making sure that all of my stays, no matter where I was in the world, I was hitting a Starwood property.
And that's the trick. You would think that, wow, you guys must travel a lot. But it's less about traveling a lot and more about the discipline. For example, I was at Mix.
In Vegas, right? So we were at the Mix conference in March. And the difference between my stay and your stay was that you were staying in the Mandalay Bay where the conference was. And you'd think, well, that's a smart move because this conference is local. But I was staying in the Westin, which is just down the road, down the strip, maybe 5 minutes away. But instead of not getting points like you, I was getting my points, which are accruing to my platinum status.
Exactly. And now I'm kicking myself because if I just had that 5 minute walk, I would have got these points. The point system is a nice way also as a business traveler to kind of give yourself a perk in a very ethical way.
Yep.
The company is paying for the room because we're here on business. But then a couple times a year, you can cash that in for weekends with the wife.
Right, exactly. And let's be frank here. I mean, this is work. I mean, we go around the world, but we're away from friends, family, loved ones. And, you know, whilst you're traveling around the world, it's kind of a lonely place. But the great thing is that whilst I'm away from my girlfriend, I can also treat her, thanks to the perks that I've picked up with my stays, to maybe a weekend away somewhere in a nice hotel.
All right. So kind of wrapping it up, there's tips on getting to and from the airport. Remember, carry on only. Don't panic if you forget anything. Use local trains and buses. At the airport,
Yep. So at the airport, make sure that you're kind of fast and efficient getting through security. Also, there's we didn't mention there's a priority club you can join to get into airport lounges for $99, I think it is, for the card.
PriorityPass.com.
PriorityPass.com. And that's 600 lounges around the world. A very, very good buy.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that you make sure that you check in online and get the seat that you need. You're using all of the tools available to you on your laptop and also on your mobile device when you're actually traveling around the airport. Speak the language of the sky, as Scott said. Make sure that you're, you know, talking as succinctly as possible. And also, you know, those important foreign phrases that will get you out of scrapes.
Right. Definitely specific phrases to your situation. When you're on the plane, if you're on a long haul, mentally segment that flight. So you don't go insane. Drink lots of water. Helps to know your flight attendants, too. If you fly the same segments, make sure you know the names of your flight attendants. You'd be surprised the benefits that that will accrue. And then speaking of benefits.
Yeah. So speaking of benefits, using miles for upgrades. I'm a Starwood member. I use all of those things to make sure that I get my upgrades when I go to hotels. I can get free nights, money off nights when I stay for pleasure. Making sure that you're using your airline miles points system, making sure that you've got the credit card that's associated with the program, so you're building up points and making sure that you're taking full advantage there.
Mm-hmm. And then tools that you might want to use online when you're traveling, definitely TripIt.com. Both James and I like Kayak, KAYAK.com, for booking travel. Also, Bing Travel has a really nice price trending thing if you're booking in the U.S., Also, absolutely recommend SeatGuru.com.
Yep.
So those are our travel tips from the hotel here in Sydney, Australia. Thanks so much, James, for chatting with me.
No problem. Thank you.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.